Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the April 11 edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture released a world agricultural supply and demand estimates. And we've gotten through all the month of March, and now we're just waiting to put corn into the ground. What's next for the marketplace? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. Our panelists today include Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois. Our special guest in Memphis, Tennessee, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. Well, let's begin our questions, not with our panelists this week, but we'll start with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Good Friday afternoon to you, John. Thanks for taking the time with us.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Well, the first question, and producers here wait to see exactly what you've done with your land and which crops you've decided in the last 3 weeks to plant and how far along you are. Can you tell us all those kinds of answers, please?
Well, my wheat acreage is about the same as last year. Corn acreage is the same, about I'll probably be planted 60% of it March 20th. It's about an inch high right now on the other part. Started last week, and it's still in the ground, and part of it I hadn't planted. So, and we've planted more than anybody around, and generally it's been so wet and cold that very little is going on in our area. It looks like the corn acreage is going to be down a lot. I'd say at least 25%, maybe more. Some of it's already in rice, which surprises me. But in general, it's just wet, and we're just now getting some good weather. I went over my farm this morning, and we were the only single farmer that was planting, which surprised me. We were planting milo and beans and corn this afternoon. Wheat looks good to awful. Depending if you plant it late, you're probably going to fail it.
Greg Johnson, you have a question?
Yeah, John, in addition to you being a farmer, you're also a fund manager. And I was wondering if I could get your perspective on what the funds are thinking or looking at, or what you're thinking and looking at as a fund. I mean, does the cheaper dollar enter into this? Does the uncertainty in the Ukraine enter into this? You know, the funds are long record amount of beans, and they're long a fair amount of corn. How does all that enter in as a fund manager?
Well, I'm a fundamentalist, and there are only about 2% of us fund managers that are fundamentalists. The rest of them are technical. And all the technicians just long up their eyeballs, which I think is kind of interesting. I'm a bear, so I think it's a good setup. If the weather breaks right, or the bean stores in China, cancellations, et cetera, are accurate, we could have a heck of a sell-off. And the fundamentalist, I strongly doubt the March intentions report. 8.5 million acres of prevent plant last year, plus the CRP increase coming out, isn't apparent. It's as if we're going to plant the same thing as last year and assume that the weather is going to be equally bad. So I think we're going to find 4 or 5 million acres of stuff going primarily beans and corn.
Pete Manhart, you have a question?
What's your look at the carryout potential on corn if we would grow as many acres as we have this year?
Oh, gosh, it'd be way up there. I've still got I have a fundamental hard time believing the feed consumption of all grains is going to be up 16% when meat production is down 0.5% to 1%. It makes no sense to me. I keep thinking we're going to find all this corn later. But obviously in the March intention report was not that way, but we have less cattle on feed, we have a hog PED problem, and the broiler industry won't increase. So where is this consumption coming from? So I fear that we might find 500 million bushels of corn down the way. from feed use. It's just being grossly overestimated.
John? Hi, John. This is Jackie.
Hey, Jackie.
Hi. We've been hearing all kinds of things about rail transportation issues, you know, in the northern Midwest and here in our part of the Midwest, too. In fact, I talked to someone today up in South Dakota. They're $1.25 under on old crop corn just because they can't move it. What are you seeing happen with basis on old crop corn and beans in your area?
Both of them are falling a little bit, but not much. The new crop basis have been falling, too. But the old crop basis is a little bit softer, but not anything drastic. In fact, historically, the basis is good here.
I'd like to pull all of you at this point and keep John in the conversation. If you've got more questions for John, just ask them. But to see where everybody is after the USDA reports, and I mean all of them, so the prospective plantings, the grain stocks, and the WASD numbers, and whether at this point on new crop corn and soybeans, you're feeling that the price levels we're at they're good at the moment, but are we looking forward to lower prices or higher prices or a neutral run? And maybe, John, I'll start with you and then we'll go down the line.
Well, I think the one that sticks out to me is new crop beans. I think they're a big risk of the downside because I think the acreage is maybe even higher than this. And we have a large world old crop carryover residing in South America, and I keep thinking we're going to see the exports and all of that just die, but it has not happened. But in my personal opinion, I think the biggest downside on the market is November beans.
Greg Johnson?
I would agree with that. I'm not sure why November beans have a 12 in front of them. I think by the time fall rolls around, they won't have a 12, they won't have an 11, they'll have a 10 in front of them. But that's long term. I mean, one bushel to the acre difference makes 80 million bushel difference. So, you know, two bushels is 150 million bushels. So, you know, that's a big swing. But if you assume something close to normal weather, you know, it sure looks like new crop beans are too high priced. As far as corn is concerned, you know, if we get those extra acres, which we won't know about till June, then corn's probably overpriced as well. But from a farmer perspective, for whatever reason, they just seem to be unwilling to sell new crop corn at these prices. And if the weather stays a little wet and cool, maybe we can get a little bounce short term, you know, maybe a little bounce, but I think longer term it sure feels like both corn and beans are headed lower.
Before I get an answer from Pete Manhart, do you think, Greg, that next year, and I've seen this in writing from Daryl Good, that $300 million is the right carryout?
I think it could be. I mean, I know the government's using, what, 240, some in the mid-twos, low-twos, but again, one bushel better, and you're right. You're right up against that 300.
And the government would be kind of the unofficial official from way back early on, and they won't have a number until May
yeah.
And the WASD numbers there. So how about with you, Pete Manhart, on new crop corn and soybeans?
Well, I'm definitely in the bean boat that we'll have a 10 or even lower in front of it. So I would be marketing beans. I'd be have lots of them either covered or sold. On corn, I still think we're near highs there. I think the acreage will go up a bunch. Last year, we planted after the middle of May, and we had great crops. Can you imagine if we really have crops like we did 5 years ago where we average huge amounts, what the carryout would be? I think the carryout still for next year, we're looking at $1.9 billion to over $2 billion. I think the acres will come up 2 to 3 million from where the USDA has it.
Yeah, and Jackie Banks.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at it from a risk management perspective, we're well above the crop insurance levels. So why wouldn't you be protecting these levels? I do think that beans have tremendous downside potential unless we can get the corn in the ground. If we can really get going and get the corn in the ground, and I'm hearing from guys in Iowa, they're not switching off of corn on corn like we thought they were going to. Then I think beans might stabilize. But I still say, you know, you can't let these prices just walk away. You have to manage your risk, and that means getting protection. And I think that we're going to pick up at least 3 million, if not 4 million acres on corn.
So John, how are you protecting downside risk for soybeans?
Am I doing it?
Yep. How are you doing it?
I've been hedged forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm hedged out into 15 a lot, so I'm...
On both crops, corn and soybeans?
Yes.
Not cotton and rice, too?
Well, I'm not planting any of them.
Okay.
So far, I'm not. Once they get them way up there. But there's so many people sold their cotton pickers off, it's hard to get back into cotton.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've heard a few that have they're starting to buy them. I'm a little surprised. I've seen a couple of them and actually talked to farmers that are in that process, but that seems like a pretty big investment, although you've got a lot of money around and you might get back in the game, I suppose.
$650,000.
You'd have to have a lot of money around to get back in that game.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that used cotton pickers are very expensive, too.
And brand new ones. I just had a guy down in Texas buy one. It was almost
$800,000. He got the list price, but if you're real sweet talk, they'll sell it for $650.
Well, I'm sure he gave me the list price. You know?
Okay, so let's turn our attention and the clock back just a bit to old crop at this point, and we can take up what's been happening there, what producers might do. So some of you heard and some of you did not. I know Jackie was in studio with us, and she just had a little discussion about what the basis levels might look like in South Dakota, the Minnesota basis for corn. We heard this afternoon was 85 under. They remain at 35 under in the northwestern corner of Iowa at the Everly, Iowa facility today. This all in large part because they simply aren't moving ethanol out of the plants there, one of their largest users of corn in the area. And I'm wondering whether that will – I'm just wondering how you see that continuing to play out, and maybe – before I go any further with this, I want to hear what Greg Johnson has to say, since we heard it once from the Andersons. I'd like to hear Greg's view of how that plays out in the Eastern Corn Belt first. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Todd. I really think that it will keep a lid on basis exploding. We're not going to see, positive basis levels, or small overs, if anything, but by the same token, it's been said several times, this is the smallest big crop we've ever seen. If we really have this much corn, why aren't basis levels weak everywhere? And they are weak where but that's more of a transportation issue. As far as if they could get movement, I think basis levels would be a lot better there. Here in central Illinois, we're seeing the processors paying small unders, 5 to 10 under.
Yeah.
And typically, you would expect that to get better throughout the summer. Now, maybe if there's a lot of corn, that moves from other places, Iowa and the Dakotas, maybe we don't see those overs, but I don't see the basis weakening a whole lot. I just think it stays right where it is.
Yeah, so this is a strange balancing act, Jackie Vakes, between the eastern and the western corn belt and the smallest big crop that we've had.
Well, that's true. And I think, when you looked at the grain stocks report and you saw the farmers sitting on 55% of the old stocks, you really had to wonder where they were. And I think that the rail situation says to us that a lot of that is sitting in the North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and parts of Iowa. And I look at it as an ongoing concern because we don't know when this rail situation is going to improve. And it could have an impact on the carryout somewhere down the road, because if you can't move it, what are you going to do? And, it's not just, Greg, it's affecting elevators in some areas, too. I'm hearing of guys that are having hard times getting rail in to move the grain that they want to move. So that all trickles back out into the country and back into the bottom line of the farmer. And so I'm glad that we've got great demand on the East Coast and that it's going to keep us in a good place. But it still doesn't mean that, you look at the whole thing. I read an article today in Wall Street Journal, which I thought was interesting. They've been estimating that the rejections out of China have been about maybe 20 million bushels. And they've now said that the rejections out of China have been 56 million corn bushels, costing elevators like you guys $427 million. And that corn's got to go somewhere else again, if that's the case, and be resold. So that's just another piece of the puzzle.
Hmm. So, hey, John, I want to come down to you because I'm thinking about this puzzle piece just a bit, and your basis levels for corn, because you'd be kind of the front end of the export market where you are there in Memphis. Do we have continuing pull for the export of corn? Does it start to shed off, and do they turn their attention to South America and the safrinha crop? And I'm really trying to put in my mind the balancing act that is this new balancing act that is really happening here in the Midwest with supplies of corn.
Well, and we've got really wet weather and the crop's late getting in, and the acreage is going to be down. The basis is basically around September, even September. It did get as much as 10 over, but you know, some September, more or less September futures is the basis, but the crop's late and there's not much of it. So I think we're going to be a much smaller player than we have been in the past. Like last year.
So I got to think about this a little bit, and I don't know, Pete Manhart or maybe Greg, you can jump in. So if all this is the case, let's see, as we get to August, normally we would have quick ships. We have a in August, early September. We're going to be late here, maybe. Well, later. We're not late by any means yet. We've got a crop. Gosh, we may have a heck of a big crop stored up in the northwestern part of the country. And I'm just really, I guess that I look at it and think, holy smokes, where does that thing go? And what impact does it have?
And I would say that, you know, right now there's just a very small inverse. July corn's about 5 cents higher than new crop December corn. So, you know, the market, it's tight. You know, it's saying that, you know, they want to put some kind of a premium in there to make sure that old corn, you know, there's enough old crop corn. But if that June 30th acreage report gets revised upwards, if we do get corn planted in April, you know, you could see that market go to a carry. The reason we've had inverses the last 3 years is because we've had below trend line yields the last 3 years. So,
right.
You know, tell me what the weather's going to be like in July, and you know, then we'll know whether we go to a carry or keep this small inverse in there. But
yeah.
I don't think it goes to big inverse regardless, because I think 1.3 billion carry out is still enough corn that, you know, that we don't need to see big inverses in this market.
Yeah, it just feels odd, and because I think it feels like demand is screaming, we need corn, but we can't get corn, and then I don't know. It's just an odd feel to the marketplace, I guess.
Well, and farmers haven't, you know, they're sitting pretty well financially. I mean, so they don't.
Yeah.
It's not like they have to
right.
sell corn. So that doesn't mean the corn's not out there. It just means that it hasn't moved yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, they may move it eventually, I suppose. We'll find out when. What level are they going to move it at? And what level are they going to move it at today, and will they find that, and will they have to adjust it down, Greg, do you think?
Well, they've been doing a good job, I think, of selling old crop corn on this rally. I mean, we've rallied mm-hmm. almost a dollar from where we were in January, and they've done a very good job of selling corn on the way up. My concern is that we haven't seen them sell a lot of new crop corn for whatever reason. You know, they say input costs are higher and they need $5 corn. Well, if we can get $5.20 on the board and then you take a normal 20-cent basis, maybe we will see $5 corn. But even if we don't see $5 corn, the market, if they think we have too much corn, you know, they're not going to be too concerned about whether a farmer can make money or not. They're going to get the price where they think it needs to be. So I'd like to see farmers get a little bit more aggressive here on selling some new crop corn.
Hey, Pete, as we wrap up the first part of this program, do you have something you've been watching in the marketplace you think that producers should be taking advantage of at this point?
Well, we watch the basis, of course, but flat price where it's at is it above your price that you can make money. And we still believe there will be more corn planted. Last year we planted a lot of corn, and it all got planted after May 15th. So planting late doesn't mean less acres. I think we'll get it all planted, plus we'll get some of those non-planted acres from last year and end up with more corn acres and more bean acres. And I think you have to look at where your profit line is. If you're above it, unload a bunch.
All right. We, of course, are in the midst of Commodity Week. Our panelists include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, who you just heard, along with Greg Johnson of the Andersons and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. Our guest, of course, is John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute is here now with today's weather forecast.
Spring has finally arrived in Illinois, at least for this week. Temperatures were about a degree above normal. Very little precipitation fell in central and northern Illinois. However, southern Illinois saw amounts in the ballpark of 1/2 inches. Thanks to precipitation in the last 2 weeks, soil moisture and stream flows look good across the state, causing the U.S. Drought Monitor to remove all drought in most of the abnormally dry designations in Illinois. Based on a water survey network of soil temperatures, the soils around the state continue to warm very slowly. The 4-inch temperatures are in the mid-40s to the low 50s across the state. The National Weather Service forecast for this weekend shows temperatures in the 70s across the state with widespread precipitation on Sunday and Monday. The heaviest amounts will be in northern and western Illinois and could be in the 1.5-inch to 3-inch range. Temperatures will be much cooler on Monday through Wednesday with nighttime lows dropping near to below freezing. The longer-range forecast out to April 24 show an increased chance of below-normal temperatures across Illinois and the Midwest and an increased chance of above-normal precipitation across northern Illinois.
Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, with the weather forecast. Here are the numbers as they finished up for the week on the trade, and these are the highs and lows for the weeks and the changes Friday to Friday. May corn this week had a high of $5.19, the low there at $4.94. Settlement price was down 3.25 cents at $4.98.5 in the May. December, or the new crop harvest month, at $4.99.25, settled 7.25 cents lower than it did last Friday. Beans, $15.12 for the high, the low at $14.59.5 on the week. Settlement price in that May contract at $14.63, down 10.75 cents. November beans were up 6.25 this week, Friday to Friday. Settlement price at $12.14.75. May bean meal at $4.72.90, finished down $6.20 on the week. And the bean oil change from Friday to Friday was up 53 cents at $42.10. May wheat futures, $6.88 the high, the low at $6.56.25. A settlement price at $6.60.25, down 9.25 in July, $6.68.25, and settlement price Friday to Friday down 8.25 cents in the soft red winter wheat. Live cattle June contract 135.77.5, finished 97.5 cents higher than it did last Friday. The feeders up $1.55 at $180.75 in the May contract, and the lean hogs changed up 67.5 cents Friday over Friday at $121.22.5. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Have you dialed in yet? I hope so. 217-244-9455. That's the number to call with your pledge of financial support on this Friday afternoon. And thank you for listening to our programs. This is, naturally, the 11th day of April, recording for Commodity Week. We're talking with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. I don't know whether we've, John, helped or hurt in this discussion, but it seems to be a mess to talk about the marketplace at this point. So when you look, John, I know you're marketed 2014. You say you're marketed in 2015. Corn and beans both?
Yes.
How much?
I'm about 85% hedged in 14 and about 60%, 65% in 15. It's power prices in this, but still. And I might go higher in 15 if I get a little rally in the markets.
Would there be anything that would bring you out of the marketplace, make you pull those?
I don't generally do that. I mean, we've got a lot of irrigation, so we sort of feel like we have, we know what we can make yield-wise. And like some of you, everybody's been talking here, it's very profitable. I mean, $5 corn, $5.60 where I sold most of all the corn. We make more money than we ever dreamed of making. So I don't tend to pull hedges when I think it's very profitable. Now, if I were hedging at a loss, I'd pull them, but I don't think I'd hedge to begin with if it was at a loss.
I'm going to move your farm north. I want you to be in southern Illinois, maybe in the St. Louis area. So you'd have corn, soybeans, wheat to plant. So you would have planted wheat last fall.
Yep.
And then maybe further north, so you're here in Champaign, Illinois, you could put wheat in, but it would be less likely. What kind of mix would you have in both those areas?
Well, you're all dry land. That's
yep.
quite
all
a
dry
bit
land.
Different. That's a huge difference. I don't think I could. I would have a whole different concept of hedging. I think I'd be a lot less hedged and a lot more puts because you just, you know, if you're dry land, you just don't know what you're going to yield. So I would be more in Jackie's point of view of owning puts and things like that and having maybe 50% hedged by fixed price sales or something of that.
Okay, I want to make sure that we're clear. When you talk about hedge, John, are you talking about cash sales? Are you talking about futures?
Either one. I prefer futures, but
okay.
A lot of people, most farmers prefer cash sales.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we were clear on that. Because
but same thing.
Yeah. Well, it is, but...
except for the margin call.
yeah, but you can also move around with futures.
That's exactly
right. I do
right.
it frequently. I mean, you may have your corn hedged and you can't plant it, and you can just abandon your hedges and go plant beans, or the corn goes down so much in price that beans are more profitable and you can switch your hedges. But if you make an elevator sale, it's a different deal.
Yeah, that's exactly why we use the puts and the futures, too, because it gives us flexibility.
Absolutely. I think that's worth a lot.
Everybody else in agreement on that, Pete Manhart?
Yes, I think... I think we ought to be a minimum of, he said, 50% hedged right now and maybe higher for this year. And you ought to be, I think, at least 30 for 15. If we actually would have a good crop this year, what would the prices be for 15? I think you just need to have them protected.
Greg Johnson, your longer-term thought?
Yeah, I like having a diversified portfolio. So I don't think there's anything wrong with having, you know, 20, 30, maybe even 40% hedged or flat-priced. But if you want to get much more aggressive than that, as John refers to, we just don't know what the weather's going to be like here. And, you know, we can go from a great-looking crop to a not-so-great-looking crop in a matter of months. So, you know, if you want to get more aggressive and get that second half of the crop sold, basically, you almost need to do it with puts and some kind of minimum price strategy.
Very quickly, a final word from each of you. We'll start with Jackie Vakes.
Well, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about the weather, but there's also that... The fund weather, and Greg talked about it before. They've never been this long ever going into a planting season. So just remember that when you're thinking about risk.
Pete Manhart?
We're getting ready to get out there in the field. When you get out there in the next 2 weeks, be careful and take breaks when you need to.
And Greg Johnson?
I think the one commodity that looks like it has the most potential for downside is new crop soybeans, and I think farmers need to get more aggressive and get some hedges locked in on new crop beans.
Yeah, thanks to our panelists and our guest, John Bondurant. That wraps up this edition of Corn.
If you put 100 people out there, I don't have two that are going to more bean acres from corn.
I do.
Unless it's a rotation where they've been corn 3 or 4 years in a row and they're going to put one field back in beans.
Oh, well, I do a lot. I do have a lot of people in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. I buy into the 1.3 million acres less corn out there very easily because that just is all they've talked about. And when you talk to seed salespeople out there, it's apparent that's what's going to happen.
Well, if you've got your bin full, I think, which apparently they do, I think they'd be more likely to stay with beans. I mean, you'd look at it and go, holy crud.
Well,
when are they going to dump this corn? In July and August?
That's what I was trying to work towards. That's why I asked the early, you know, when are they going to dump the corn? Will it be in good condition? If they dump it all in the northwestern part of the Midwest, what does that really mean for the export market, for the rail market,
Condition's a good question, Todd. We've got people sitting down here that have corn that's not in good condition. So, you know, that's an issue, too, from that standpoint. It's really tough. When I talked to the guy from South Dakota a week ago, they were a dollar under. He never thought it could get to a buck and a quarter.
That would tend to make you plant beans, wouldn't it? Unless the bean basis is equally bad.
That's just what they're going to do. No, the bean basis isn't as bad. But,
yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that they have a whole bunch of corn in storage, so they're looking at it. They already know they have it. They've got a rotten basis, and they can plant beans. That's actually, they can plant beans, and the further you go it, from Iowa, Minnesota, but if you go to the Dakotas, it was really South and North Dakota, that it would be more likely beans, I would think, than corn anyway.
Yeah. Well, except last year. I mean, you know, they've done a lot of shifting from beans over to corn, but, you know.
Well, thank you to glyphosate again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And
I shouldn't have said
but the
that.
Other side, the other side of it is, I'm hearing from guys up in North Dakota, they've got frost as deep as 12 feet yet. This is one of the deepest frost situations they've been in years and years and years. And yet they said, you know, we deal with this kind of stuff. So if we can get the top 8 inches or so workable and everything, we'll plant even if the frost's not out.
Well, the other thing, too, to remember is a year ago, the February crop insurance average for beans was $12.87. This year, it's $1.50 less.
That's right.
It's a lot easier to take that prevented plant. 60% of $12.87 is probably still pretty profitable with no expenses. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that 60% of $11.36 is as profitable. So I think there's a little bit more incentive for them to plant something this year.
Well, I hope so.
What about the feed number? That just bugs me no end, how we can have 16-17% more feeding and 1% less production.
Just as a reminder.
That bothers the heck out of me too, John.
Yeah, my recorders are still running just for fun.
Yeah.
Hey, John, I think it's feed and residual. And
I know what residual is for. Yep. That doesn't make any sense. Who makes up that residual?
That's a good point.
I've been doing this for 30 years, and I still don't know the answer to that.
No. I've been told it's like a miscellaneous category on your, in your accounting.
It's a flex number because they can't, because there's no way to account for feeding.
That's exactly
you can't
right.
Count, they haven't ever and don't. At first, they couldn't survey for it because everybody fed, so it wasn't possible to survey because there was too many of them. Yeah. I think that's the right explanation. And then now, I don't know, they just haven't ever surveyed for it.
Well, now there's one bear. Now, I'm a bear, obviously, so one bear story is there's so much more on-farm storage than there was a few years ago. They have not factored in the increase in on-farm storage. Therefore, there may be more stored and newer storage facilities are not really being counted. Now, that's a bear talking.
Well, that's you're a bear talking. That is a question I asked when I was out at the Ag Forum, is if they were taking into account the extra silver in the country, and they said they have been surveying like crazy to find out how much extra silver is out there and work it into their equation
right,
to try and do it. So,
to give a flex number on the amount of silver, because they don't survey all farmers, so they have to figure out how much really,
right.
How much extra is there and how much they should put in addition or subtraction, depending on what it is.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it's a point of contention. There's no question about that. The residual number, you know, it seems as if when, isn't it funny? Because when we've been in short years, prior to all of these, the last number of years where we've had all these odd weather circumstances and the short crops, you'd all of a sudden find a bunch of grain somewhere along. And it was always in that residual number. So I think at one point in time, I thought they really had their back up against the wall because there was nothing left there to work with anymore.
Yeah, I think everybody's pretty much on the same page you all are for soybeans. On ending stocks for next year, which will build or maybe double, go to 300 or 240 to 300 or something like that. But I'm guessing the fall of 2015 ending stocks number is a bit wider. So Darrell's at about 1.5, I think, maybe as big as 1.6. That changed with the WASDE report. So it's probably, let's see, it was 1.4. So he's probably down at 1.5.
Yeah.
Maybe. And I think Pete, you gave me a 1.9.
I'm high.
You're at 1.92.
I'm a bear.
Yeah, you're a bear. How about you, John?
I don't want mine to be so high. You don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I think we're 1.9 this year. I think we're 102 high on ethanol. We got to average 951 to be exact.
Well,
100 high there and 400-500 high on feed. So that's me.
Yeah, I'm 1.9 for this year and over 2 for next year.
What's that?
I'm a 1.9 for this year and over 2 next year.
Well, I'm a 1.9 this year, too. You and I shouldn't talk. It's bad.
You're commiserate over a beer or what?
They might need more than a beer.
Yes.
Isn't it interesting that May and July corn are higher than December corn? I find that sort of interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I didn't get a number from Jackie and Greg.
Pete, you just don't need to talk about these things.
I'll try to keep my mouth closed more.
Well, I question, I guess, basically, you know, that we can't question the January number as to where everything ends up, but, you know, that would be a very dramatic move. Unless we really up the production, I think that, you know, going to $1.9 billion on this year would be a pretty dramatic move for them to make.
Let's see.
Unless we have some kind of a major issue someplace.
All right, let me
question how they got to the 1.3 to 1.4 for now.
Yeah, Right now we still have kind of 400 million bushels. Am I still right about that? Based off the grain stocks from the first quarter or second that are kind of odd. For livestock, that may or may not show back up somewhere.
Yeah.
And then ethanol, we can't be producing ethanol, right? I mean, although the EIA, what have the EIA numbers done?
We're
running behind their estimate.
We need 98 million bushels a week.
And we're getting 92 to 94.
Yeah.
So we're running about 100 million down, the way I figured it.
So there's another 100 million, so that's 400, so that's 1.7.
But it all depends upon what the summer driving is. It's just like last year, you know, they said, oh, we're going to be down on consumption on gasoline, and we ended up 1% up on gasoline consumption. So how can you predict that?
Greg, well, you're quiet.
Well, I would go somewhere in between. The government's, it's hard for me to think the government's going to admit that they're wrong by that much. So, you know, I could see them going to 1.6 this year and then 2 billion next year. But to go from 1.3 to 1.9, like Jackie said, that's a big jump in one year.
That's a haul.
Although, you know, we are up against something. We've had a change at the top of NAS, which is the statistical group. And how Joe handled things versus how Hubert handles things might be entirely different. You know, the head of NAS looks at NAS as if it's nothing but a distributor of numbers. That's all it is. It's nothing else. That's it. And so, you know, if you look at it from that perspective, then it shouldn't change. That's right. I mean, it's just a distributor of numbers. When the numbers come in, these are the numbers that they put back out. And we'll see once if that's the way it is. There's five different entities that are looking at these numbers before these reports are actually put out to us. And so, you know, you don't know with that change either. But, you know, when you look at beans, you talked about the bean carryout, Todd. When I look at beans, I don't believe 135 million, number one. I think we're lower, much lower. We might even be negative in that respect. I don't think the export number's high enough for where we are right now. And then if we take the imports out for next year.
Yeah, but the 135, that's going to include all the imports that come back in, right?
65 million.
65 million imports right now. So that, you know, That's keeping us. If we didn't have 65 million imports, we'd be down to 70 million carryout.
Right, and what I'm saying is the 65 are in it, so that balance is going to stay at pipeline.
Yeah, I still think they're going to have to up,
which is either
up exports.
It has got to be between somewhere between 120 and 150.
Yeah.
Or 160.
Hey, Greg, what do you see on crush? What do you think? They took it down 5 million on this report.
Yeah. I think it's going to be hard for, you know, we tried to import corn, we, the Andersons, a couple years ago when there was a big inverse in the market. And on paper, it made sense to do it. But there's a lot of paperwork involved in getting a ship loaded in South America and getting it up here. I guess I just find it hard to believe that we're going to get 65, you know, more than 65 million bushels of beans up here. I mean, you know, I guess if there's a big enough inverse, you know, money solves everything. But, you know, assuming this inverse kind of eases up at some point in time, and of course, I guess that solves your problem, because if the inverse eases up, that means the demand is slackening a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and on the other hand, though, from what I understand in talking to people about the shipments coming up from there, they don't allow as much foreign matter, so you can afford to pay a little more, depending upon what your transportation costs are, just because of that, right?
Right. But, you know, and it's not just the factors. It's, you know, there's legal documents that have to be signed. I mean, it's there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through. And like I say, for $2 a bushel, people will jump through those hoops. But for $1 a bushel, people may not jump through those hoops.
And what are we now, 140 to 150?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a question.
And we keep on shipping. That's what surprises me.
Yeah.
But we keep on doing.
Keep loading, baby.
It's amazing that we're buying stuff that China bought,
but
rebuying them from them and making $1.50.
Yeah, there, I think there was a news blurb out this morning on the wires that I can't remember which Japanese company it was that was selling beans to China, and China's defaulting, and they put a dollar figure on how much this one company stands to lose if...
Marubeni,
that's who
yeah,
it was.
Marubeni.
Yeah.
Amazing, and yet we keep on shipping.
Yet we keep on shipping, exactly.
I mean, it's really interesting.
It is, you know, and you've got to wonder, too, it's, you know, it's all about relationships, too, in that respect. So I kind of felt like they were going to buy beans from China just so the relationship would stay good, you know. And I think when China came in, I was shocked. I don't know about the rest of you. When China came in and said they'd buy optional origin beans from us, why would you do that? What do you think, Greg? I couldn't figure that one out.
Yeah, they must have a relationship with somebody that has the ability to export out of both North and South America. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Well, that would be a lot. That would be everybody, right?
And that'd be your ABC, your ADM,
yes.
Bucky Cargill.
Yeah,
sure.
ABC. Well,
sure.
Not everybody, but yeah, ABC.
The biggie. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Let me throw another one at you. China doesn't look very good economically wise, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about a week or two ago. More than 50% of the Earth's population is living in countries which have a negative birth rate. In other words, instead of having 2.1 children per woman, they are under that, some of them as low as 1.6, such as Taiwan, Korea, etc. We've been listening to years about the story about the wonderful population growth. Well, the wonderful population growth is only in the poor countries.
Well, that's been true for quite a while, though.
Yeah,
really,
but
hasn't
I mean,
it?
It's increasing. As the world's economy gets better, women decide they don't want to have a whole bunch of children. And if that's the case, then you've got negative population growth, which is basically all of Europe and mm-hmm. Russia and Japan and China.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thought pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I know the middle class is increasing, blah, 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 but...
And you can't afford to buy it if you're where it's a poor country where you're having more kids and trying to feed more.
Yeah, so they don't really count.
No.
Well, you know, I guess on the opposite side, they're saying close to one-third of the population right now, which is a younger one-third, I guess, in China, are sitting in close to middle class, you know, so how much of their consumption offsets some of that population?
Well, I agree, but that's been an ongoing process. Wall Street can't seem to stop telling you that, but it's not a new process. In fact, the process is sort of going the other way, and because now in China we have a shortage of younger age workers. They're actually going down year to year.
Oh, and they also don't have women to get married to the young men that they allowed to be born.
That's right.
And that's why just recently, did you see that, where they are now allowing couples to have more than one child?
Yep.
You know, and I'm sure that that's a part of it.
Yep, and then the women are saying we don't want to have more than one child.
So, well, it's an interesting balancing act to watch them as they try to manage both, as they try to manage population, where it lives, and how quickly it moves into the middle class. Because if you keep, at this point, I think they're trying to manage the middle class. They're trying to bring a middle class up in rural China, as best I can tell, in order to satisfy them. Because if you're looking at your city cousins and they're living much better than you, you're not going to be very happy. And if you've got a lot of your folks that are living in rural China, that creates a problem.
What about the Ukraine?
That's something we didn't talk about.
Yeah,
at all
I know
today.
We didn't talk about Ukraine today. I didn't bring it up. Ukraine. You know, here's the thing about it, and I think China's the big player there that nobody really ever discusses, and it's not China Russia, it's China Ukraine, because China has a vested interest in the capitalism side of Ukraine, but a vested interest in the potential communism side again. Of Russia, I don't know how they play it. They've already dealt their hand, meaning they already have contracts with Ukraine to get their corn, and they invest there, and
I suppose they'll continue to invest, and I can't imagine that they're terribly unhappy with Putin. I don't know.
Are you suggesting then that
they're on both sides of the fence?
Well,
yes.
They are, but are you suggesting that they might take some steps if things really get out of control there with Russia?
They would not enter at all.
They're on both sides.
Because they're hedged. Roughly speaking, they're hedged on both sides of that fence. They've got it done. Either they continue to put money into Ukraine and they get corn back out, or they have a direct link, relatively speaking, with something in common with Russia to bring grain back out of the eastern side of Ukraine. And I mean from the Dnieper, the Dnieper River, from the river to the east. So, you got me.
Do you pronounce that D or not?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
No, and I don't know. Hey, Greg, do you think, you know, we've seen some corn sales on the books to people that we don't normally sell to. You think some of that is hedging Ukraine also?
I think so. I think, you know, if you're a lender, you got to think twice about lending money to Ukraine because you're not sure if you're going to get it back. And number two, if you're an end user, there's, you know, what's to say that Putin doesn't take over another couple of sections of Ukraine and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, shipments aren't quite as, you know, I mean, I think that's why, you know, Bunge has said that they've got a facility there and they're shipping stuff like, you know, you couldn't believe. I mean, I think they're trying to get everything out that they can just in case it worsens over there.
Right. If you're a Bunge or a Louis-Dreyfus and you're invested in terms of infrastructure and land, although they're land leases, so they don't own land, but still they're invested, it's got to be a scary prospect at this point.
Yes. I think they're just trying to minimize their exposure, so they're shipping as much as they can, as quick as they can.
Well, and you know, that's when I look. You brought up the fund situation before, and it's a double-edged situation with Ukraine. Okay, if Ukraine really does get into a conflict of some sort, it seems as if the funds believe that we're going to get all, you know, a lot of their export business, right?
Right.
If they don't get into it, then some of these exports that we've got on the books right now that brought us up to 1.75 may go away from a cancellation standpoint.
I think it's similar to when tensions rise in the Middle East, oil price, you know, the funds buy oil as a potential hedge or a spec move or whatever you want to call it. I think here, the Ukraine, it's a food thing and not an oil thing. So I think you have European money that doesn't typically buy U.S. commodities. I think they're buying U.S. commodities, either futures or cash.
They're buying corn and wheat?
Yes.
Just to hedge their bets. Same thing South America does with us when they're unsure of, you know, what the Brazilian crop's going to be. China comes in and buys bushels from us in most cases, and then other years they would cancel them. This year we haven't seen that. But I'm concerned, the funds, they've dropped 28,000 on corn. They're down to 266,000 long. They were 330,000 long in 12-13 and 470,000 long in 11-12. And, you know, we've got the bean side at 190,000. The highest they've ever been is about 250,000 long. And wheat dropped. They only dropped 3,000 on beans since the report came out. And we actually have seen wheat drop 15,000 since the report came out. But, you know, it's a scary situation in that respect, because I talked to one of the guys up in Chicago during the week this week, and he said everybody is just breathing whatever the funds are doing. If the funds begin to sell, and they begin to sell in earnest, he said, this is going to become something that could be very, very ugly.
But John hit it right on the head. 2% of the funds trade fundamentals. The other 98% are trading momentum and technicals and charts. And
once it goes, it goes.
Black boxes, headlines, reading the headlines in the news.
So the headlines will start it.
Yes.
The headlines will start the black box, and then it starts to trip.
Well, and I mean, you know,
shoot the black box.
Shoot the black box.
It trips, but unlike other places, at least we have limits.
That's exactly right. There's no question about that. And when you talk about limits, that's going to be interesting, too, you know, if they go to a different limit situation.
Has anybody griped about these new limit things? I did to the people. It starts May 1.
I'm not up on that. What's that?
Yeah,
they have a new limit system. Twice a year, going to change the limits based on the last.
Oh, how'd I miss
so many
that?
Days.
Yeah, 40.
We talked about it.
It's crazy.
It's a 45-day moving average, or some
yes.
basically,
yeah.
But they're only going to change them in the spring and in the fall.
Yeah.
Which I think they should be done quarterly. I don't think it should be a 6 month.
I think they'll just leave it where it's at. How many times have we had problem with the limits we have now?
The only thing I see.
Very few.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing I see, Pete, is that when you look at a 40-cent limit, you know, that's 5% on $8 corn.
What if it goes to 90?
It's 8%. Oh, it 7%,
isn't it?
She's saying the limit's too wide.
The wind limit's too big right now.
I'm for no limits. That's what I have. No, seriously. If you have no limits, you have smaller moves.
You do the calculation. You do the calculation on beans and corn as of today's values. I think the limit on corn would actually go down a little bit, but the limits on beans would go up quite a bit.
I think the limit on corn is going to go down.
As of May 1st, they're going to use this new structure.
Yep.
We have trouble keeping our customers.
Well, we're never going to know what the limit is.
That's why they're doing it for 6 months at a time.
What about customers? What about traders? Like,
well, yeah,
I know what they are.
They change too damn much.
Yeah, no, they're going to be. We actually, when they went to the 40-cent limit, I went to the meeting that CME held, and we are the only industry that does not have quarterly changes in our limits. You know, and
I don't believe that.
Everybody there was screaming because that's what they wanted to go to. They wanted to go to the quarterly changes because it was a more even reflection of what the actual average price was. And so the investor wasn't putting so much more money up because, believe it or not, the size of the limit also has a big impact on what margin requirement is.
How about the changes that Merck's going to do on charging you and me?
Oh,
you
I
read
know.
About all that
oh,
stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to cost me $37,000 a year.
I know.
What are they doing, Pete?
They're raising the amount that they charge. They're going to charge X amount per month for each set of things you use. So if you use metals, you use energies, you use livestock, you use grains. I think mine is per machine, $340
oh,
a month.
On the machines and the quotes and the live quotes and live ticks. And,
I
thought they charged that way already.
They already do, but they're going to double it. Good Lord, I
didn't
know that. It's going to be $340 for each of my machines.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Per month.
Dial in 217-244-945. Because we just went from 3,000 to 6,000.
Yeah. Well, you knew that the free electronic quotes were never going to last.
When did we ever get free electronic quotes?
We've had free electronic quotes from the CME and CBOT for ages. Electronic.
Only through your company.
No, no. No, no, they were free all the way around to anybody. I had them on my regular phone.
But you didn't have the open outcry.
But you didn't have the open outcry. You didn't have anything that was, you know, that was live in that
respect. I mean, I could get a 20-minute delay for $20 a month.
Yeah, speaking of which, what was the deal? Did anybody ever figure out what happened earlier in the week with the settlement and the electronics?
Oh, you mean when they had to hand settle everything? We don't know, but they had to hand settle everything, that we know. But
I saw the nice note that all the day traders came out of the woodwork and went to work on the floor. Did they all have on their gear? They
it
must
was a
have.
Mess.
That did you? I think, and I saw on Twitter somebody tweeted out, "If you forgot all the hand signals, here they are."
That's pretty good. But you know, that is a risk that you run when you shift so much to electronic and you take away so much personnel, and you know all the added CFTC costs that are going on are going to just continue to pressure them to get rid of more people. Mm-hmm. It's a sad, sad situation. And now CFTC is coming along and making some other adjustments, too. And we just got some news that's going to go into effect. It's just like you can't hardly keep up with what's going on.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Good to hear you all.
I'll post it all to the website this afternoon.
Yep. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
John, thank you.
Bye, John. Thanks, John.
Yep. Bye-bye now.